Hey, so excited to be with you guys here this morning in week two of this series called Through the Wild. Kurt kicked it off last week by giving us the first letter of this acronym, BLESS. It's not breakfast. Eric was on vacation, though, so close enough, I guess. Hey, I'm Chris. I'm pastor of multiplication and growth here at Crosspoint. So glad to have you here with us this morning as we jump into the second week. In the final hours of Jesus' life, this is like right near the very end, we see one of the longest prayers ever recorded in the Bible of Jesus. He's praying for his disciples, and he's praying for those that would come after his disciples. He's praying for you and for me, and we're given a glimpse into his heart. And it's in this prayer that we notice that there's something that Jesus, he really wants for his disciples, something that he really wants for us. This is found in John 17, verse 13. This is what it says. Jesus says this: I speak these things in the world so that they may have my joy made complete in themselves. And when we read that, like it's translated, and what Jesus is saying is kind of lost in translation a little bit. He's talking about joy, and he's talking about his joy. But the thing about what Jesus is saying in this is it's like comparing a cup of water to a well of water. What Jesus is saying, I want you to have the fullness, this well of joy that's just springing up out of you. And not just a cup of joy that's just, it's this finite amount. And he wants us to experience the fullness of his joy. And you might sit there and you think, all right, now how am I going to have the same joy that Jesus has? And he tells us exactly right here, verse 18, he says, as you have sent me into the world, so I have sent them into the world. And Jesus, he sends us on this mission. What we're being told to do, it's simple, yet it's so powerful. Jesus saying, I'm filled with this joy because I am a man on a mission. I'm a man on a mission. I have this thing that I'm told to go out and do, and he's sending you and I out on this same mission. We know that from the very beginning, all the way back to Abraham, we have this goal of blessing the world. It's what God told Abraham to do, to go and bless the world. And this whole series, Through the Wild, is all about how we can do just that. We began it last weekend. We're taking this deep dive to discover how God wants to use our lives to intersect with the people around us so that we can meet the deepest needs, the deepest hurts, and be a blessing to the people around us on a daily basis. Last weekend, Kurt gave us this first letter in this BLESS acronym that we're using. First is begin with prayer. He reminded each of us that we are a blessing, that we've been given opportunities every single day to bless the people around us. But we have to begin with prayer in order to do that. And so this is our mission. It hasn't changed since Abraham, to be a blessing. And this weekend, I'm going to give you the L and the E in this BLESS acronym. We're doing kind of TED-style talk, so if you've only got about a 15-minute attention span, this is perfect for you, all right? So just sit back. I got about 15 minutes, and then I'm going to sit down. You guys got a whole nother thing coming at you. So it's perfect if you're ADD this morning. This is the weekend for you. But Kurt, he gave us two things last week, and I want to make sure that we hit these as well, because the first one is, he said that there's this temptation that we're going to see this list, and we're just going to want to check the boxes. Like, all right, I got breakfast or begin with prayer done. I got this one done. But it's not that simple, because that's not how we bless people. We don't bless people by just checking off the box. And the second one, he said, don't dismiss these five practices because they seem too simple. Just don't dismiss these too quickly, because there's so much more to them. All right, so we've got that covered. The L, we're going to jump right in. The L, it stands for listen. The L stands for listen. To bless the world, to bless the people that God brings in to our lives, we need to get good. I don't know. Hopefully there's no English teachers out there. Sorry to my previous English teachers. Get good at listening. We're going to get good at listening this morning, all right? How many of you, raise your hand if you've ever been in a conversation where it felt like the person you're with, you know they are not listening to you at all. Just raise them up high. A lot of wives kind of nudging their husbands, just, yeah, sorry guys, if my wife was here, I'm sure she would have been doing the same thing. Like, we've all been there, right? We've all been in those conversations where it's just like, yeah. And you know, their eyes are glazed over. They're thinking about what they're going to say next. You know it. That's what's happening. Listening, it's so crucial. But there's so many things happening in our world. Your phone is buzzing constantly. I got a phone call one time when I was up here. Like, that's just a normal thing. Like, there's so much happening. You have to be intentional to listen. It's so crucial, though. There's this really cool story in the life of Jesus where his ability to listen, it's like off the charts. Check this out. This is Luke 18, 35 through 40. So this is what it says. It says, when Jesus was coming close to Jericho, a blind man sat begging beside the road. The man, he heard the crowd walking by and he asked what was happening. And some people told him that Jesus from Nazareth was passing by. And so the blind man shouted, Jesus, son of David, have pity on me. And the people who were going along with Jesus, they told the man to be quiet. And he shouted even louder, son of David, have pity on me. And Jesus stopped and he told some people to bring the blind man near to him. Now, real quick, I want to make sure we don't miss something here, because when I read this for the first time, maybe as you read that for the first time, you probably just wanted to skip over a few things. But first thing, Jesus, he's heading to the city of Jericho. This is one of the last stops on his way to Jerusalem for this Passover feast. And there is a crowd of people heading in the same direction, all heading towards Jerusalem. Picture like circle of lights downtown day after Thanksgiving. You're shoulder to shoulder. You can't move. There's so many people. Everyone's in one space. And it's in that, it's right there where Jesus hears this one man crying out to him. I don't know how he heard this man. I picture it like the mom who can hear her toddler in a room full of toddlers crying. She can hear her individual child. And I picture that's what it must have been like for Jesus to hear this man amidst this crowd, just hordes of people. And the man, he just cries out even louder. And this is what happened next. Jesus asked, he said, what do you want me to do for you? Lord, I want to see, the man said. And Jesus replied, he said, look and you will see. Your eyes are healed because of your faith. And you knew that was coming, right? Like, blind man interacts with Jesus. Of course he's healed. Like, that's just kind of how this thing goes. You've maybe read a story like this before, but there's two things about this story I want to make sure we don't just skip over, because the first thing, this is telling us right here that Jesus has the power to heal blind people. Like, let's not just like read that and just take that for granted. Like, Jesus can heal blind people. But not only that, Jesus, he asked kind of a silly question. Like, when I read this for the first time, I thought, like, really, Jesus? Like, what do you want me to do for you? Like, the blind man's got to be sitting there thinking, like, well, I don't know. I'm blind. That's a good first step. Maybe you can help me with that. Jesus, I've heard you can do some crazy things. Like, I'm blind. Like, what do you want me to do for you, Jesus? Like, where is that even coming from? When I read that, I was thinking, like, is he just trying to, like, tee this up for, like, the miracle, just knock this out of the park? Like, oh, it's coming. There's this crowd of people. This is my chance. But no, I don't think that's what Jesus is doing here. I think there's something that Jesus does that I don't want us to miss. I think that Jesus asked this question because Jesus didn't assume that he knew what people needed. Jesus didn't assume that he knew what people needed. And so he asked questions. And he listened when he asked questions. Jesus says, what do you want me to do for you? And no, today isn't about us going around and doing that, just asking everyone, what do you need me to do for you? Because that's going to get really old really fast and you're going to be doing a million things all at the same time. That's not what today is all about. But if we do ask that question, this morning's all about, we have to be able to listen to hear actually what they're saying. There's this story about this missionary, this author, his name's Michael Frost, that they put this into practice very, very intentionally. They traveled to this remote village in India, and they showed up with this crew of people, and they've got all these skills with their entire group of people. They come and they say, hey, what do you want us to do for you? Very similar to the question that Jesus asked, what can I do for you? What do you need me to do for you? And they show up and they're like, we're ready. We can build you a school. We can build you a hospital. We can build you a church. Like, we're ready. We're able. We can do whatever you need us to do. And this group of people in this remote village, that they say, we'd love a mailbox. And I'm sure in that moment, they must have looked at these people like, what? We just traveled halfway around the world. We've got this crew of people that can build you literally anything. And you want a mailbox? But what's crazy about this story is if you live in a slum, if you live in one of these remote villages and you don't have a mailbox, that means you don't have a zip code. And if you don't have a zip code, that means you don't even exist on a map. And so it doesn't matter if there's 10, 20, 30,000 people living in this slum. If there's no zip code, if there's no mailbox, they don't exist. And that means there's no social services coming their way. There's no help from the government. There's nothing. And so these people that showed up, they asked this question, and they were simply saying, we want to have an identity. We want to be a part of the country that we live in. And so they listened, and they did just that. We've got to listen to our community. We've got to listen to the people that we're surrounded by. We've got to listen to our workplaces, to our families, to our classmates, our friends, our coworkers. We've got to listen to the hurts, the needs, the wounds that they have. Because God has placed you in their life for a very specific purpose. Now, when I say listen to people, I'm not just talking about sitting there and just, you know, just doing this whole act of listening. No, I mean listening to where people are really at in their lives. In real estate, we've all maybe heard the phrase, location, location, location is the most important thing. And that's not just true of real estate, it's true of people. We have to listen to the location, the posture of someone's heart when we're in a conversation with them. Some friends of Hannah and I's, they did this right after college. They did just this. They decided that they were going to move to an underserved part of the city of Indianapolis and just begin to listen to their neighbors, to their community. And so they bought a house, and they started to participate in life. They started to have community dinners at their house. They just were an open ear for the people around them. And as they continue to practice this hospitality, this love, this service for their neighbors, their neighbors came to them and said, hey, we'd love for you to help us with something. There's this strip club that has just been a hub of crime for years. And it just got shut down again. It had been open and shut down, open and shut down, open and shut down just for so many years. And it just got shut down again. And we would love for you to help us to make something happen. And so our friends, Brandon and Derek, they bought a strip club in Indianapolis. Right after college, went to Anderson University, a couple of good Christian guys, a couple of years later bought a strip club. And what's crazy is they bought this strip club, and they turned it into a coffee shop. They turned it into a community center, actually. It's really cool. Lincoln and East Street, right on the corner. It's called the Lincoln Center. And what's crazy about all of this is they host these after-school programs for the kids from the school just right down the street. It gives them a safe place to go after school and to belong and to get their homework done and have people to just sit with them and listen and care for them. They do monthly community dinners. They do community events. There's a coffee shop that's open all throughout the week that pays for the entire thing. They've got affordable housing on the top. I mean, it's incredible. And what's crazy about it, and what I love about this place, is you can walk in. It used to be called Sassy Cats, by the way. Obviously, that's a great name for it. But you could walk right in right now. You could walk in today, and there's still a pole right in the middle because they thought, why not? We might as well just leave it. And so seriously, like, there is a pole smack dab right in the middle of this coffee shop, and you wouldn't know what it used to be used for. But the places that we live, the places that we work, they're constantly speaking to us. And we'll hear them if we're intentional about listening. Whether it's a neighborhood association, city council, PTA group, mom's group, whatever it might be for you, maybe just showing up for the next meeting, maybe just showing up and listening and ready to act, maybe that's your first step. To bless the world, we first have to begin with prayer. But the next we have to do is we have to listen. This is about blessing the world. This is about Jesus' mission to go and to change the world. About how to reach and restore people and communities and to have this mission reproduced in the lives of others. And so our goal is to listen. And so I want to give you a really practical tool to do just this. It comes from a guy named James. James was an early follower of Jesus, but he was also the younger brother of Jesus. And when I read anything that James writes, it kind of floats towards the top, because I just want to say this, and maybe I've said it before, but if you have an older brother, I have an older brother. I've looked at my older brother like he's crazy before, and I'm sure you have too. James looked at his older brother for years and thought he was crazy. And then he saw something happen. Because listen, what would your brother have to do to convince you that he was your Lord, right? What would your brother have to do to convince you he was your Lord? And James, he was convinced because he saw something, but we'll get there in 2 weeks. But James, he writes this in this little letter he wrote, James 1:19, and this is how I think we can do just this all week long. So here it is. Let's be quick to listen and slow to speak. Let's be quick to listen and slow to speak. Whenever you think of it, you've got to think of it in just that way. When we're quick to listen and slow to speak, it means we're slow to make excuses. We're slow to defend ourselves. We're slow to contradict. We're slow to give our opinion. Let's be quick to listen and slow to speak. This week, as we go out listening, I think if we do just this, if we take James's advice, I think that we really can accomplish this second part of this BLESS acronym. But this is just part two. Part three is coming at you here in just a second. Check this video out.
For he is the champion of now and of always, of north and of south, of the air, of the fire, of the sea, of the land, of the free, of the 4th of July, of one nation under God. Indivisible, he is champion, Joey Chestnut.
Corner of Surf and Stillwell at Coney Island, opened in 1916 by Nathan Handworker, who had immigrated to the United States with his family just 4 years prior, selling hot dogs for a nickel apiece here at Surf and Stillwell.
Back off.
35 already. Right now, ahead of the 70-dog pace. It begins with the masseter muscle in the jaw. Pound for pound, one of the strongest muscles in the human body, putting down 280 pounds of force. A legend already. The legend continues. Number 11 for Joey Chestnut here at Nathan's.
Unbelievable.
I hope you didn't come with a full stomach this morning, because that is disgusting. Can I just say, I hate hot dogs. I hate them. And we all should hate them after watching that. He ate 74 hot dogs in 10 minutes. 74 hot dogs. That's over 21,000 calories in 10 minutes, people. Like, I don't understand. I heard this morning, Brett was telling me, he's like, he actually came to Indianapolis and ate St. Elmo's shrimp cocktail. He ate 18 and a half pounds of shrimp cocktail. 18 and a half pounds? Like, the dude's a freak. I don't understand it, but it's disgusting. If you're trying to figure out where in the world did this come from, the next letter is E. It's eat. It's eat. We're going to be talking about eating the rest of this morning. And what's great about eating is this one you have to be intentional with. You can't just make it happen quickly. You've got to make plans. You can't just check this off. You've got to take some time and be intentional with it. And I want to ask something this morning, because Kurt's not here, so don't tell him I said this, but has Kurt ever talked about eating? The answer is no, because if you've ever eaten with Kurt, which, Eric, I know you've eaten with Kurt, he's basically a rabbit. Like, he doesn't eat. I eat, and that's why I get to do the letter E. So I'm really excited to talk about eating this morning. When you think about Jesus and you think about his life on this earth, you probably don't jump to eating as one of the things that he did often. You probably think about his miracles, his teaching, his disciples, all these healings, and maybe like praying and walking on water. I don't know where your list falls in, but there's one that I think we wouldn't think of so quickly, but eating has got to go right near near the top of the list. Here's one of my favorite stories of Jesus actually doing just that. He's eating with some people. It comes from the Gospel of Matthew, and actually it's Matthew. He's talking about himself. Check this out. This is Matthew 9, 9 through 13. It says this: as Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. "Follow me," Jesus said. And Matthew got up and he followed him. And while Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners, they came and they ate with him and his disciples. And Jesus, he's walking along, and this guy, Matthew, sitting there, kind of sitting at his booth, and this is kind of his office in this time. And he says these two life-changing words to Matthew right here. He just says, "Follow me." And maybe we've talked about it before, but in Jesus' day, tax collectors, they're like scum of the earth. They're like the worst of the worst. They're kind of like just the last people you would ever want to associate yourselves with. They worked for the Romans. They gouged you out of like your taxes. They were traitors. The Jewish people hated tax collectors. They're just the absolute worst. And so that Jesus, he calls one of these people to come and follow him, one of the most despised people. This must have been an absolute shock to the religious people around him. And notice the very first thing after Jesus, after he calls him, they go to his house to eat. Jesus doesn't say, "Hey, come and follow me, and then you've got to take this discipleship class, and then you've got to read the whole Bible, and then you've got to do this." No, he says, "Follow me," and then they go and they eat a meal together. And Jesus, he's sitting there and he's eating with this group of people. This group of people that in those days you would have never wanted to associate yourselves with. You see, eating was central to life for people back in this day. Obviously, it's central to all of us because we've got to eat. But eating in these days, in Jesus' time, eating with someone, it was a statement that you wanted to be associated with that person. That you were saying, "I believe in, I support, I affirm, I love this person that I'm eating with." You were giving that person value and worth. Who you ate with, it was a statement that you loved and that you cared about that person. And so what Jesus was doing by eating with these people, it's communicating so much more than just this mundane act of sitting at a table and eating a meal. There was so much more to it. And so, of course, the Pharisees, the religious elite, they're super offended. They're super offended by Jesus. They're like, how can your rabbi, how can this guy who's supposed to be like the guy be sitting there eating with those people? And so they ask the disciples, they're trying to undermine Jesus and they're trying to get behind his back. Like, what's he doing eating with those guys? Why is Jesus doing this? And Jesus, when they're saying that, when the religious elite, they're saying that about Jesus, trying to undermine him. I just picture him. He's probably like reclining at this table. I picture a bucket of KFC, like chicken wing. Jesus just like kind of reclining. And he's like, "Oh, you guys, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick." And when you read that and you read about the sinners and the other tax collectors, you're probably reading that thinking he's talking about them. But no, that's not who he's talking about. He's actually calling out the religious elite, the people who thought they were better than all of those people. And it's absolutely crazy. What we've got to see about Jesus in this story is that eating, it wasn't just something that he did. Eating was this integral part of his mission of reaching and restoring the world. Jesus, he was a missional eater. And for us to live out the Jesus mission of blessing the world, this mission that we're all sent out to be a part of, this E, it stands for eat. It's about forming relationships with people where we live, where we work, to go beyond small talk, but to really dig in. Because really, when you sit down at a meal with someone, the things that they're willing to share with you are so much different if you're just standing in the hallway talking to them. When you sit down and actually share a meal, there's this really great quote from the book Right Here, Right Now. A couple guys wrote this book, and I think it's just so important. This is what it says: sharing meals together on a regular basis is one of the most sacred practices that we can engage in as believers. Missional hospitality is a tremendous opportunity to extend the kingdom of God. We can literally eat our way into the kingdom of God. We can change the world by eating. Imagine what might happen if every single Christ follower here at Crosspoint were to do just that, were to regularly go out of their way to schedule time to eat with people who don't know Jesus, who don't walk with Jesus. If we're going to bless the world, we've got to go out and actually eat with the world. Eating with people, it's absolutely essential to blessing the world. You see, God, he's designed us in a way that eating isn't just this necessity. It's social, it's relational, it's an opportunity to share about real life together. And I know you might be sitting out there and you're already thinking of the buts. You're already thinking of all the reasons that, well, I just don't think I can make that happen. You might be saying, I don't have time for that. I don't have time for that. I scarf down a meal at my desk during lunch, and I get home, and we're running from practice to practice to practice. We barely have time to even have a meal with our families, let alone eating with other people. Like, Chris, I just don't know how that's possible. But what if, maybe, just maybe, this call of Jesus to be missional eaters is the thing that finally gets us to the tipping point to realize that we've got to start managing our time a little bit differently. What if this is the way that we begin to see that maybe I've got to restructure my schedule so that I can build in time to do just that? But we've got to be willing to shift our lives and to include these regular rhythms, like slowing down just enough to eat a meal. Another big but that I hear when I've had conversations with people is they think it's got to be this elaborate feast when you have someone over. You've got to like, it's like Thanksgiving dinner at their house. They're like, well, if I'm going to have someone over, I've got to do it right. And so they get the china out and all these great things. And it's like, that you don't have to do that. Can I just say that to you right now? Your house doesn't have to be perfectly clean. That the dishes can still be in the sink. Like, it's all okay, because that's not the goal. There's this really great quote, Shauna Nyquist. She wrote a book called Bread and Wine. And this is what she says about this. Begin by inviting people over. Order pizza. Serve it with a green salad, bottled salad dressing. Focus on making people comfortable, on creating a space protected from the rush and the chaos of life, a space of laughter and safety and soul. Many of us were surprised to hear that sharing a meal has a lot to do with blessing the world. It's not hard to imagine that some of you out there might be sitting there thinking like, oh, I can do that. Like, that doesn't take a whole lot of effort to just sit and have a meal with someone. And so here's just a few ways I think you can do just that. Maybe it's this summer, you're out on Geist and you invite people to go out with you. And maybe it's you just have turkey sandwiches on the boat in a cove on Geist this summer with your neighbors. Maybe that's one. Or maybe it's inviting your neighbors over or your coworkers over for a backyard barbecue this summer. Maybe that's the simple next step for you. And I know there are tons of reasons that can make this difficult, that can make this uncomfortable, but I believe it's totally worth pushing through our excuses, getting out of our comfort zones so that we can discover our mission is really to do just that, to bless the world through these really mundane tasks of just sitting down and having a meal with people. My wife Hannah and I, we began to experience this in our last house. We lived in Avon, and our neighbors, they moved in after us, and so it was a really easy way to get to know them. Like, if you're the new ones, it's easy to get to know those around you. And so we introduced ourselves, and they're a couple in their late 50s, and they had grown children back home, and they had just moved to Indiana. And it was crazy when I asked them where they moved from. It was pretty obvious, because she had this Australian accent, really thick Australian accent. Her name's Annie. She's so sweet. And so we're kind of digging in. And she said, yeah, I moved here from Tasmania. And Tasmania, if you don't know, is this island off the coast of Australia. And she's telling us about her house, showing us pictures of her house. And she lived on the Bay of Sandy in Tasmania. And she moved to Avon, Indiana. Seriously. This was the Bay of Sandy, where she literally would tell us that she would see whales in the bay from her kitchen window. And then she moved to Avon, Indiana. I have no idea what's wrong with Annie. And literally, I don't care who this guy is. He's not worth it. I mean, I just, there's no way. But as we got to know them, she always had questions about my job. She always was asking, because she's like, why are you a pastor? Like, why? And I'd look at her and say, Annie, I have no idea. I mean, I don't know. You're asking me, like, I didn't choose this. And when someone says that to me, I know there's a backstory. I know there's a backstory to it. The more time we spent with them, the more I began to discover that she saw church, she saw Jesus followers as divisive, as condemning. Nothing like the loving and graceful Jesus that they supposedly followed. That's what she said to me one time. And I was like, oh, that's harsh, Annie. That's harsh. But all too often, those words are somewhat true. And as our relationship continued, as we started to spend more time with Annie and Brent, you know, for a glass of wine in the evenings, or we'd go over and share a meal with them, not only did we get to try Australian delicacies like Vegemite. Anyone ever had Vegemite? Don't do it. It's disgusting. It's literally just the absolute worst. I don't know why anyone would do that to themselves. But what happened when we got to share a meal with them, when we got to share meals with them, is the level of relationship changed. The openness and the willingness to share about real life, about the hurts that they had had, about how they had ended up here. We found out that they were actually high school sweethearts, lost touch, and then 40 years later met again and got married. Like, we found out things that we would have never known had we not sat down and shared a meal with our neighbor. And at this point, They're not followers of Jesus. They don't walk with Jesus. They don't attend a church or anything like that. And that's okay, because Hannah and I, we're playing the slow game with them. We're not rushing in. We don't have this Messiah complex. I don't want you to hear this story or think about eating with people and think you've got to have this. Well, I'm going to make this happen. I'm going to be one that changes this for them. That's not what it's about. It's just about blessing the people around you. And here's the real question. If you knew that the only thing standing between a coworker of yours and eternal life was just you eating with them, would you do it? If you knew that the only thing standing between your next door neighbors and a relationship with Jesus was you having them over for a barbecue, would you do it? I think you would. I think you would, and I know that you could do it. And remember, you don't have to do this alone. We encourage everyone to jump into a small group, to be a part of a community. There's small group signups out there in the commons, because we're called to pursue this mission together. It's not easy to do solo. And so maybe the next time your small group meets, maybe you decide we're going to have a barbecue or a party instead of sitting down in a circle and talking about the same questions this week. And maybe you invite your neighbors, or you invite a friend or a coworker that would never come here. Maybe that is their first introduction to your small group, to your community, to your friends, to God. I think we can all do this. You'll find that every single missional practice in this blessing the world, it's going to get easier, it's going to be more fun, it's going to be more impactful when you don't go at it alone. And I know how things are. I know it's easy to hear it in here and think, okay, I can do this. And then you get home and all the excuses start to pile up. But through prayer and through listening and through eating, I think we can actually do it. Even if just half of our community right here started doing these missional practices on a regular basis, I think the places we live, the places we work, they would begin to look different. People will find their way to God. Broken and lost parts of people will be restored. And so this morning, as we wrap up, I encourage you to stand, grab your connection card, flip it over to the back. There's a few next steps I want you to walk through with me, because I think we can all do this. This is not a huge ask. It's just a meal. It's just a meal. So flip it over. Here are a few next steps. The first one is to take some time this week and ask God to interrupt your life. As you go through your week, I want you to listen to God as you interact with others and expect an interruption, and embrace the interruption when it comes. Don't push it off. Don't say, oh, I'll get to that next week. No, embrace the interruption. The second one is to commit this to practice and to memory, that I will be quick to listen and slow to speak. Third one, begin your morning with prayer. Jesus, how can I bless your world today? Who can you put in front of me today so that I can be a blessing? And so will you do it? Will you do it? I think we can do this week. This is something we can all be a part of. We have the opportunity to be a blessing to the world around us. And all it takes is listening and eating. And that's something that I know every single one of us can do. Let's pray. God, this morning for this entire group of people, I pray that you would empower them, that you would encourage them, that you would remind them that they can do this, that this is not an ask beyond their capabilities, God, but this is something that they can all be a part of. Jesus, empower us, fill us with the ability to go out and not be afraid. We love you. Amen.